On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
And welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network, presented in part by friends Joe Reed and Alcova Mortgage. Score your perfect home today. All right, spring football is wrapped up now. Going into the offseason, we got the transfer portal opening up on Wednesday. But just to put a nice little bow on the spring and kind of what we saw out of the Cavaliers, and especially on Saturday at Scott Stadium, we got the guy, Ahmad Hawkins, the Ball Hawk, coming on. You can hear him on the radio all fall long as lead commentator for the Virginia Sports Radio Network for football, and also his podcast on the Believe Network. Ahmad, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. Track coach, football analyst right now. So we're in the thick of things, the outdoor track. So having fun, man. And it's getting warm again.
Man, you're always wearing so many different hats. I mean, I can't keep up with what you're wearing these days. But, you know, that is the time of year. We got the football transfer portal opening up on Wednesday. We've got basketball in full bloom right now. It's spring, you know, that's what we got. But let's talk a little bit about Saturday, what we saw at Scott Stadium in the spring game, and just some initial thoughts before we get into a little bit later. We're going to do a 3-2-1, three players who impressed us, two takeaways, and one thing to watch going forward. We're going to get to that in a second, but just initial thoughts, what you saw out there from Cavaliers and Tony Elliott's squad.
Man, I just saw, you know, the spring game is always fun for me as a former player, just because you get to see guys have an opportunity to showcase what they've been working on since the conclusion of the previous season. And then the transfers can show a little glimpse of what to expect from them as they go into the summer and start to prepare for fall camp. So I look at it like a glorified spot. A lot of times they don't give you access to a sparring session, but the spring game allows the eyes, you know, to pull the curtains back and kind of and what guys you get excited about.
Yeah, I mean, no more than normal. Like this spring game, like you've got 20 plus guys that are brand new to the program that you haven't seen before. It's more than just the mid-rear enrollees as freshmen, but so many different transfers, especially the quarterbacks. I know a lot of people had their eyes on them. And, you know, one thing that I kind of took away from this, because, you know, the message board was heating up after the game, like, you know, oh, we didn't see the red zone offense, or, oh, we didn't see this and that. It's like, guys, like, they're playing with mix and match offensive linemen, some guys that you're never going to hear about again. I mean, just to be honest, like, you know, some walk-ons that, you know, are kind of getting their moment to shine out there and get some, you know, playing time in front of family and friends on a nice Saturday at Scott Stadium. This is not going to be the lineups that you see when we get to the fall. And a lot of guys were out this spring, which is normal. This happens. Like, guys are recovering from off-season surgeries and whatnot, just kind of getting ready to, because you want them at their best come the fall time. And then if for your red zone offense, I know a lot of people were talking about that afterwards, because we got 3 points in the first half. Well, first of all, Will Bettridge was not playing. So the kicking game was a little questionable out there. Daniel Sparks had a nice field goal, though. So good for Sparky. But
yeah, he did.
Looking at the rest of it, like, and I think Chandler Morris, you know, the quarterback, talked about this after the game, is like, you know, things got a little vanilla when they got into the red zone. They weren't trying to put too much on tape for teams to watch, you know, UVA being one of the few games in the country that was on national television. So Dez had to keep it a little vanilla out there. And I know that's a huge question for them going forward, is the red zone offense, but they weren't going to show you what their fixes were going to be for that, if, you know, whatever the fixes may be.
Yeah, man, it just depends on the mindset just that you have in your history, like your resume, what you can get away with and what you can't get away with. So if you aren't a fan of Dez Kitchen, then you don't care about, you want to see production. So you want to see points. You want to see touchdowns. We were aggressive. We went for it a couple times on fourth down in the red zone, and the defense got to stop. So if you love defense and you love Coach Rudd, you're encouraged. You're like, yes, you know, we held them without points. You're cheering. But if you're an offensive guy and you want to see Dez Kitchen and offense do better, you're like, here we go again. Same old thing. So it's like that happy medium as a coach. Like, you don't, you want to sell, like, you have to sell the program, you have to sell the weapons that you have and show the glimpses. So it's like, I want to score. You know, that's the former player in me is like, go score. And I play both sides here at UVA. So I'm torn because, like, no, you're not scoring because I was a DB too. So it's just a tough spot to be in. And it's like Coach said, you leave points on the board. And Will Bedrick is like the most valuable player to us because when he wasn't there, the first two attempts wasn't pretty. And I feel for the young man that missed both of those kicks. But yeah, man, you definitely want to see touchdowns in that first half.
Yeah, I know. Tony Elliott said he wanted to see maybe 10, 17 more points there at the beginning. You know, get these guys into the end zone a little bit. But, I mean, this is spring football, and it kind of – I was trying to remember back. I feel like it was right before maybe the 21 season. That was the last time, like, I came to a spring game and we saw, like, a lot of touchdowns flying around and stuff. And it just kind of depends on the day, like – and some, I think Chandler Morris made this point too afterwards. It's like, I mean, this defense has been practicing against these same plays for a couple of weeks now. So like they know exactly what we're doing. So it's kind of hard to fool them out there. And I know the secondary is depleted, but those guys were fighting out there. I mean, they weren't giving up everything for free, especially when they got into the red zone. So it was interesting. I want to just while we're here, you know, the topic of spring games and spring practice has been such a big one across college football right now. What do you see as the value or the impact of a spring game? And do you think it's something that, I mean, maybe Virginia should pursue going forward? I know Tony Elliott's a fan, but I guess where do you kind of land on that?
I mean, I just feel like you want to showcase the players for the fans. So does it have to be televised? You would like it to still be televised because you're selling your product, you're selling your season tickets, you're selling, you know, whatever, how you market the program, you start in the spring, like it's a buildup. So I think it's important in that aspect as far as like the game. But if you wanted to simplify it and just said, hey, we invite you to our practice facility and we have our season ticket holders, you have access to come tour the new football operations, and you could come to whether we do it indoor or outdoor, but you're viewing the game or the control scrimmage, or you can still have it at the stadium. I don't know if you want to put on a TV production, that's up to the ACC networks and the ESPNs, yeah. But you still want to like market your program because you want to get fans excited, but you know, content creators like ourselves, like we'll take the exclusive and just tell you what we saw and show, you know, the videos that, you know, we took on our own because, you know, that drives traffic to our platforms as well. But you will hope the fans can have some type of true real-time access to the program.
Yeah, kind of at the beginning of the spring when this all started happening, I was like, you know, at the times when you're asking for more than ever from your fans as far as like donations, NIL, and you're trying to, you know, raise more money, like it doesn't make any sense to have less access for fans. And so that's where I kind of landed then. But kind of thinking about it, I really think, you know, Coach Prime and Fran Brown at Syracuse, I think they're onto something, man. Like that would be something to watch, you know, kind of NFL OTA style, get like a joint practice and then get like a, you know, preseason scrimmage, kind of, you know, NFL preseason game kind of thing going in the spring. I think that'd be really interesting. I know there's probably some concern for, you know, injuries and stuff like that, but that, I mean, as we've seen at UVA this spring, like injuries can happen at any point. Like you can't, the only way to secure a guy from not getting injured is wrap him in bubble tape and wait for to release him in 6 months.
Yeah, man. Football is football, right? So it's just one of them things where we always feel like we can control situations where it's advantageous for us and our stance, our belief. And when it comes, creator has it already written. So it's just one of them things where I like the idea of controlled scrimmage because look, if you're paying with the NIL and like money is going to players, so people feel like you're copying the pro model with a pro model slash preseason game. We know we're not going to have preseason games, but if you could, why not have it in the spring? I don't know what the finances would be as far as teams, the location as far as like the travel and the lodging. But I mean, as a football player, like I could practice against another person and practice against my brother for 15 practices.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. Like you want to, as a guy, you want to go up against someone that's not like your own teammate, you know, that's kind of what happens at fall camp. That's why you get so many like little fights and skirmishes because you're like, all right, we've been going against the same guy for like 4 weeks now. I need to see someone different. That's just something that I've been thinking about. I know Tony was asked about that earlier this spring, and he said he does have some interest in it. So we'll see if that kind of develops. I think this spring it was just kind of too soon. I think it was too soon to kind of throw that out there, and that's kind of why the NCAA kind of squashed the idea. They're like, well, y'all are, going for it right now, but other teams haven't had the chance to kind of like think through those opportunities and stuff. You don't want like an uneven playing advantage or whatever. But I was like, hey, the guys thought of the idea. If they thought of it, just let them go for it. And they could be the test case and see what we see. But it was interesting. And it just like, the attendance at spring games for a while has kind of waned. And I will say, like, it was like 40 degrees this past week at Scott Stadium. Like, it was not a pleasant spring day out there like we got last year. And even spring attendance last year wasn't, incredible. But it's a free event, so I don't think, like, they're trying to pack the stadium necessarily, and it's not really marketed towards students or anything. So there's some different things you can do if you want that model going forward. But if you want to change it up, I think you could have kind of opportunities for some new avenues there. I mentioned earlier, we're going to get into a little bit of a spring 3-2-1. So we're going to first talk three players, kind of stock risers who impressed us this week. I got an article going up on the saber.com later about five guys I think have really improved their stock this spring. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of what players we land with. Then we're going to do two takeaways, and then one thing to watch going forward. So Iman, hit me with your first player. Who impressed you this most coming out of the spring?
I don't know, man. I just like maybe because he Dakota just looks the freaking part now. I mean, I always knew the ability when he transitioned to tight end, his pass catching ability would be a cheat code, but he looks like a full-fledged flex tight end that could do both. And we saw him have a nice catch on the seam route. So yeah, maybe because he wearing number nine, but I like Dakota a lot.
I mean, yeah, if he can be a guy that can work that middle of the field like he did on those two long plays that he had out there, like that's something that Virginia really needs. And you saw it a couple times with Tyler Neville last season, that he could kind of work that seam a little bit. And I think we'll talk about Chandler in a little bit, but I thought it was really promising to see Chandler using the middle of the field. And so if you've got a big 6'5" athletic weapon like Dakota Twitty out there, who I had not seen in a while, and he changed his hair, he changed his whole look this offseason. I almost didn't recognize him when they brought him into the media room. The only reason I knew it was because he was wearing the number nine out there, and he's, a massive human being. But it was good to see, and it was good to see kind of the whole tight end group as a whole. John Rogers made a couple plays out there. I know Sage Ennis is injured right now, but obviously you kind of liked what you saw out of him before he got hurt last year, as far as a blocking tight end guy that can make a difference there. So that tight end room, it's kind of a sneaky one, because Neville was so good last year, but I think they got some good options there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And then, Dakota showed a flash versus, Clemson, just getting there and making a play. He scored that early touchdown versus them. So the talent has been there for him. I know it's just all about being comfortable with him in the running game. He's been a willing blocker, a willing learner. He's been a sponge. So that tight end room is could be sneaky good. And I know a lot of fans, we love the tight end room here. So
Yeah.
it was encouraging the spring game to see those guys performing.
I wrote about last year, when I was growing up, this was tight end you, man. Heath Miller, Tom Santee, John Phillips, Jonathan Stupar. Who am I forgetting? Like, the list goes on and on.
Yeah,
Like,
Billy Baber. We had
yeah.
Casey Crawford, and it's a list goes on and on of guys that played tight end here and played it well. We always say
Yeah.
Heath Miller. Right? We didn't forget Heath
Yeah,
there.
Heath is
Yeah,
number
Heath.
one.
Yeah, all right.
You'd still hear the chants in the stadium, but yeah, Dakota kind of a little bit different. Obviously transitioning from wide receiver. A lot of those guys back then, like, they're kind of your classic like tight ends. Like, when you think of tight ends, like, those are the guys that you're thinking of back then. And then, I mean, we even mentioned in recent years, you had Jelani Woods and
Jelani
Tony.
Woods.
I know, right? Different kind of guy. Tony Poljan, even. There's been some decent tight ends in recent years, and I think Dakota, certainly has the potential, kind of what he came in with. First guy I want to talk about is a preferred walk-on And this guy got some playing time last year, and I wrote about him in kind of the build up to the spring game, and then boy did he prove me right, is Billy Kadelka. Big 6'8", 255. He said he's trying to get that weight up to 265. One of the largest human beings on the team. He comes up with 4 sacks in this game. I know it's like playing tag touch football out there when you're talking about these sacks in the spring game, but he looked really impressive. And the thing that always gets me about him is his motor and just how much he is going. Like the sack that he had against SMU last year, I was like, this kid is just running from the first play. And so, like this spring, I wanted to watch what does this guy do, kind of building off of that. And like I watched him for a few possessions in a row, and he was just tossing blockers to the side. I won't mention names, but he was like, this kid was on a mission to get into the backfield. And I know Chris Slade, he put it out there, but he was like, if this guy stays healthy, you know, he's going to get drafted. He's going to be an NFL guy. What have you seen from Billy this spring?
Yeah, man. So I played with a guy that was a former lacrosse player at Patrick Kearney. So
Yeah.
if he hasn't contacted Patrick Kearney and he need PK contact, he get in touch with me. I got PK contact because Patrick Kearney was the same way. A guy that lacrosse players have the advantage because they have the agility to get up the field. Like their reaction time, it comes from their sport. The main thing with them is just setting the edge versus the run, just being valid and understanding concepts and schemes and where to be. But when it comes to rushing the passer at that size and being able to be that agile, is a cheat code. So we talked about him last fall. He got, like you said, the SMU game, finally got an opportunity. And then this all spring, all he talks about is that would have been a sack coach. That would have been a sack coach. And coach talked about Coach Elliott. He should be fun to watch. And also, Jewett Hayes had about 2 or 3 sacks himself. And
Yeah.
that kid is like 6'4", 230. So he's another long athlete coming off the edge that, we got some guys, man. But Kadelk is really, really jumps out.
Yeah, a lot of people want to jump to the transfers that came in, obviously for good reason, because a lot of those guys are accomplished players, and Fisher K-Mac and Kazim Moore and Mitchell Melton, like the just to say, like this defensive end room, and I wrote about it earlier, like they're loaded and there are a lot of different ways they can get after the pass rusher. Like Melton's kind of more your like bull rusher, kind of explosive off the edge, and Kazim's really fast and agile. And then Fisher and Billy are these long athletes coming off the edge. Like they're going to swat a couple passes this year, I'm sure. And one of the things Elliot kind of mentioned with Kadelka is where he's improved is setting the edge in the run game. That's a big thing. I think he only weighed like 235 when he came in last year. Like he's a little bit of a string bean, but he's put on some weight. And you mentioned the lacrosse player aspect of this. Kearney was a defenseman for UVA. Kadelka was being recruited as an attackman. I'm just trying to imagine what a 6'8", 235-pound attackman looked like. And he kind of said the thing about from lacrosse. And you mentioned, kind of, the getting upfield. He was like, in lacrosse, we're just taught never stop moving your feet. Well, what's better for a pass rusher than never stop moving your feet and getting upfield? So really impressed by him. Who's another guy on your list?
Dylan Newton Short. I mean, I know he's so both of the guys. So you got Abdullah,
Yeah.
Newton Short. So both early enrollee receivers. They just make plays, man. Both of them made explosive plays during the spring game, but I saw it like as soon as they got on grounds, just how they work, how they're a sponge. And I was excited just to see both of those young men make plays.
Yeah, Abdul is a guy on my list here too. Like, Des Kitchings didn't want to put this on him, but he was like, he kind of reminds me of, and I don't want to go full in, but he kind of reminds me of Malik Washington. And that's like obviously a name that gets people to kind of perk up, but it's like Malik Washington at this age, not the finished product of Malik Washington that we got to see in that 1 year of Virginia. So he's definitely someone that kind of popped off the page as soon as I like got to the spring game. I walked in like right as kickoff happened, and just seeing him, some of the plays that he made along the sidelines, and then he had a big kickoff return too. He's a playmaker, and he's not afraid to admit that to you too. He'll tell you about it. But yeah, I think Abdullah, I just kind of came away from that. I'm being like, there, I just don't see a way you keep him off the field. And Newton Short looked good, really good too. He had that one catch kind of along the sidelines there in the second half.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Because Cam Courtney looks good. when Sadarius healthy, he looks good, and they all play in the slot. So it's like, yeah. All right, how flexible can you be? And when you're a young guy, you're probably going to be more the specialist of the guy that's going to be, all right, just focus on one thing. But I mean, depth in the weapons that we have.
Yeah, the slot position, I kind of came away, I think we were talking about it during the game, and I was just like, I'm really intrigued to see when everyone's healthy, kind of how that plays out, because I was a huge Zadarian Harrison fan, and he just couldn't really stay healthy and couldn't get going last year. And yeah, obviously had Chris Tyree that was trying to get it going in front of him, and Cam Courtney was young. I wanted to see a little bit more of him last year at times. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a really interesting slot position kind of play out, and all those guys, very fast, smart route runners, can kind of be used in a couple different ways. So that's going to be an interesting position. The other guy I had on my list, and he kind of stole the story on the first drive, and that everyone was kind of sold after that, was Jamari Taylor. And he's just got such an interesting story, but seeing him on that first drive, I think it was 6 carries for 33 yards just on the first drive. They just kept handing it to him, and it didn't matter who was blocking in front of him. He was exploding out of the backfield, powering through guys, making guys miss. I kind of thought, even as a smaller guy, that he was going to be more of kind of your power back, but he can do a little bit more than that. He can break some plays off too.
Yeah, he's very versatile, man. And, you know, he's like, you would think, all right, so yin and yang, they're going to play off each other. They both got different skill sets, but he could do a little bit of everything as well. He may not have the full-fledged top-end speed like Weapon X got Xavier, but he could go, man. And he was running through some arm tackles. He was nice and Sutton with his decision-making and his cut. So he slipped one time, but he righted that ship the next time, and it was like, I think, a third and short. He broke through an arm tackle, one of the defensive ends that had him dead to right. So he could be really well, man, because we know X has had like some nicks, some injuries. So, you know, even with Noah Vaughn being out, it was good to see Davis Lane get some carries, man. Because one thing none of those guys have is the speed that Davis Lane Jr. has. I'm going to just put that out there. If we could get him on the field and just get him in space, if he gets to the second level, it's going to be a lot of band playing because nobody's catching him.
9 carries for 52 yards for Jamari Taylor. That was his stats at the end of the day. So that was like 5.8 yards per carry. It's great stuff, especially like I mentioned before, it's a kind of a mix and match offensive line. A lot of those guys, I think Des Kitching said some of those guys had never played before, even in practice. So you're kind of mixing and matching everything out there and not a lot of cohesion and chemistry. So that's why you can kind of see the spring games kind of look the way they do. And, but yeah, Taylor looks really promising. And I love that kind of, you know, I guess compliment, how they complement, you know, between Xavier Brown and Jamari Taylor. Cause I think I tweeted 12 times last year, once per game, that Xavier Brown needed to get more carries. And I heard Keith Gaither, you know, the running backs coach, he said, you know, they know that they got to get him some more work next year. And, you know, Brown didn't do a ton in the spring game. You know, he's again, like kind of playing behind a patchwork offensive line, kind of, you know, mixed matching guys around, guys that hadn't played with each other yet, but you know, he was kind of getting stuff to the outside and still look the same as Xavier Brown coming off that collarbone injury that he had last fall. So I still expect big things from X next year. Last player for you, who else you have?
Miles Brown. I just want, because he's so versatile. He allows us to do a lot. He could play linebacker. He could play safety. He was thrust in the spring game. And I just think he's viable. Like the more you can do. And so I just wanted to make sure I put him on the list.
Yeah, he ended up with 11 tackles on the day that led everyone in the game, forced a fumble too. Mm-hmm. And like you said, yeah, he had to play a little bit of linebacker, play a little bit of safety because Virginia, like all the injuries this spring, has been kind of depleted in both of those spots. So just the versatility. He looks like an athlete out there. Like he can make some plays. So I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of parlayed himself into, you know, some minutes and some snaps this coming fall. Two takeaways. I'm going to start with it because I know everyone's been waiting for it. Let's talk about the quarterbacks. I came away pretty impressed with both quarterbacks, and Daniel Kalen started out really well on that first drive. I love the throws that he was making. I think he started 6 for 6 on that first drive. It was a long first drive too. I'm sure when you're watching that one back, like you're just like, how long is this drive gonna go between Taylor running it and Kalen, going 6 for 6. And then Chandler Morris really settled in that second quarter. He finished on the day, I believe he was 12 for 15, 155 yards, so 80% completion rating. Didn't have any touchdowns or anything, but made some really good throws. And there was one stretch there in that second quarter where he found, I think it was Cam Courtney, Jamal Edrin, and Dakota Twitty on three straight, almost 20-yard plus plays. And showing kind of the big thing I wanted to see was with a guy that's, listed at 6 foot, but might be a hair under 6 foot. Can he step up in the pocket? Can he kind of work that middle of the field? Because that was one of the questions we had last year with Anthony Calandria. And it seems like Morris can really kind of play to all sides of the field. And also getting to see him roll out and kind of be more of his comfort zone too in that second quarter. I thought Chandler Morris looked really good.
Yeah, and you saw like the mindset of like the skill set of the quarterback. So Kalen is seen as the pocket guy. So what do you do when you have a pocket quarterback? You establish the running game. So we establish the running game, and then we utilize play action, and defenses feel like they could come after the pocket passer more, and he got out of the pocket and utilized it. Chandler Morris, it was a polar opposite as far as like it's a game. Like it was a great situation for him and for that white squad. The receiver fumbles the ball. So he doesn't have the reps, and he's on the sideline a lot. So he started slow because he didn't have the football. But once he started getting snaps, you saw, oh, this joke is special. Like a lot of times the mindset of a coordinator, even with Chandler Morris, he's more dynamic with his legs. His improvisation skills are up here, so he could play off script. So it's like sometimes you fall in love with just, hey, go make a play. So you got to see like both mindsets from Des Kitchens or whoever. I don't know if he's calling the plays for both sides, but you kind of see that when you with the run game and when you got a dynamic quarterback, how you just want to give them the football and make plays with their arms.
Yeah, I thought Chandler just looked really comfortable there in that second quarter. And just, I guess the big question that was kind of popping up on the message board is, I guess it was the first time people had really watched him. They're like, yeah, he looks a little bit smaller. So Chris Wright from the Saber, he asked him, people are saying you're a little small out there. What do you say to that? And he was like, well, watch the tape. Like threw for, 4,000, 5,000 yards last year at North Texas. Like it's nothing new. I didn't. And we were joking, like he wasn't playing with 5'8" offensive linemen in North Texas either. So, he's used to it and he knows how to kind of use it. And that's the thing about him. He's going into his 6th year of college. He's 24 years old. He's been playing this way for a long time. So he kind of knows what his limitations are, what his comfort spots are. And I think that's kind of the figuring out period now with Des Kitchings and Tony Elliott and Taylor Lamb is kind of what gets him in kind of the best mode to kind of be productive. And I think you saw a little bit of that in that second quarter, kind of where he got into his zone there.
One thing we in the media here in Charlottesville will learn, and fans, don't challenge a Texas boy that play football about their abilities, because they're gonna give you what you want. They're gonna give you a sound bite. You may think it's cocky. I ain't met a Texas kid yet that doubts their abilities when it comes to football. So a little, man, you better check my resume. This is fourth school now. This is fourth school. You go to Oklahoma. What T? I know was it Oklahoma first?
Oklahoma, TCU, and
TCU.
then North Texas. Yeah.
Party games for that team that went to the national championship.
Yeah. He
He was
was their starter at the beginning of the
their
year before
starter.
he got hurt. Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, never challenge a Texas to be PC because they're not going to be PC.
We haven't had a lot of Texas kids in Virginia. I'm trying to think of through some who we've had from Texas. I can't think of anyone off the top
Yeah,
of my
me
head.
neither. I just every Texas. Every high school Texas former football player that I've met, they give you what you want.
Yeah.
They're very confident.
And what any takeaway from you that you had from the game outside of quarterbacks?
Not really, man. I expect us to be very vanilla. I ain't gonna lie. I want to in that corner. Like I was bomb, throw a bomb, like give Trail a look. Like I wanted
Yeah.
us to bomb on them. I mean, I guess that's heartless, but hey, you weak out there. I'm getting other guys at backups ready. You know, just
Yeah.
like if we got a patchwork offensive line, if I'm the D coordinator, I'm bringing the house like we did with Bracy at the end, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Hey, man, we backed up. We could get a chance. He dialed up a dog. Bracy get a safety, and we had an opportunity to possibly win the game at the end. So, my takeaway is we have more competitive depth when we get all the offensive linemen back and hit the portal hard for, you know, the guys on the back end on defense.
Yeah, I liked seeing some of the new guys, and this is kind of my other takeaway, you know, seeing Devin Neal come in, make a play, mm-hmm. get a sack in the backfield, seeing Maddox Marcellus blow up a screen pass out there, seeing some of these just new guys kind of come out there and give you something. I think Cam Ross and Jamal Edgerin at wide receiver did some good stuff too. Yep. Jaden Thomas got some snaps out there. Like, it was good just to see different guys kind of contributing, and it shows you, all right, There's a plethora of options now. It's not as focused on one or two guys on the depth chart. I think all spring you heard from basically outside of the defensive back room, which, you know, we'll talk about later, you know, everyone was like, yeah, we got a ton of options. We got a lot of depth. Even at linebacker with three guys out that played big snaps for you last year, you still saw some, you know, Maddox Marcellus and Landon Danley and Miles Brown, you know, Stevie Bracy kind of makes some plays for you. Bracy looked really good. Was part of that forced fumble. Had the safety there at the end.
Yep.
I wanted to talk about that too. I don't know what the spread was internally in the coach's office, but you got the safety there. Then you got the Hail Mary trying to tie things up at the very end before Jason Pervard, another transfer, who made a play there. He had a couple good plays out there, you know, playing a lot more corner this spring because of all the injuries. You had the interception in the end zone there, but yeah, I thought coming out of the spring, really good looking depth.
We definitely got some depth, and it was good to see. Like, I'm with you with the linebacker position. I even said it on my own podcast, like, when we get the starters back, you can pretty much wish for third downs or third and long situation, because you could use some of those backers, because Cam Robinson does a good job as being the pass rusher. James does a good job being a pass rusher. So if you have a Bracy or Marcellus that could come off and get reps, you could have, like we did a couple years ago when Rudd was causing havoc, when he would bring in, or even a Broncos defense would bring in more backers to really do that wide nine and rush up the field and have all that speed. So that's a fun little fantasy situation for the fall.
I think with Marcellus too, he just gives you that kind of missing element of like athleticism that when Robinson has to take a play off, you know, James Jackson and Trey McDonald are good athletes, but like, you know, Cam Robinson obviously is kind of special out there. And now Marcellus kind of gives you some of that when Robinson has to miss a play, because that guy was just beat up last year. And that's why you didn't see him this spring, because any injury under the sun, it felt like that guy had by the end of the season. So now having a guy like Maddox Marcellus, who's proven at the college level, at the, you know, FCS level, that he can kind of be a playmaker out there. And you certainly saw that. I mean, he looked like a, you know, submarine missile coming off of that, coming for that screen pass there. I was like, that's not going to work if he's blowing the play up like that. All right. Looking forward, one thing to watch, and kind of the thing that stuck out to me, was the secondary. And we've heard basically from January till now, Tony Elliott say they're still wanting to add in the secondary. And they had some injuries. Antonio Clary obviously didn't participate. Now it looks like James Jackson has a long-term injury possibly. And Dre Walker's been banged up at times a little bit. And I think Caleb Hardy, Ethan Minner got banged up. He should be okay. You know, he came off in that spring game, and you know, Coach Elliott said it was just a hamstring injury, that he should be back, you know, in a couple of weeks to, you know, get ready for the summer and everything. But gotta get some more guys back there in that secondary. But from the guys that did play, what did you see from the secondary?
I mean, I thought guys made plays. I know made a good play on the back that tried to bounce it. Pravar's a guy that's 6'2", 6'3", that was playing some nickel. Now, you know, got shifted back to the outside. I mean, as a corner, that's what you play. You play outside. So whether he was in the inside majority of the times, that you get thrust back into your regular position outside, that should be a seamless transition, that in just my opinion. But like, the guy ready, that's just the end of it, because they're not going to be able to be coddled. Like, we got to create pressure. The day, like last year, was tough just sending four because you're trying to protect the guys on the back end. Just one of the things, it's like, all right, man, I got to be aggressive. And so all summer, just continue to work on your craft, understand what your weaknesses are, and have thick skin. Be able to take the coaching and step up to the challenge.
There's some good young guys in this room, so it'll be interesting to see once some of them gets back. I know Kiki Adams is a guy they're pretty high on. Corey Costner is another mid-rear guy that played pretty well in the spring game as well. So be interesting to see kind of how those guys develop. But I know they're looking to add, you know, a couple names in the transfer portal in the secondary.
We got Persinger coming in. We got a lot of speed.
Josiah Persinger, that's a guy that's – he's really – his stock is elevated since in the past year since he committed. So he's going to be an interesting one. CJ Spence, he's another kind of longer corner that's coming in. They got a lot of guys in the secondary coming in. I'm sure just kind of depending what happens at the transfer portal, some of those guys could kind of see their names on the field pretty soon here. The secondary spot's just really interesting. And you're hoping, just hoping, I mean, just for him, that Antonio Clary can stay on the field this year. I don't think there's a more kind of flattening injury last year than seeing him come off against Boston College. You're just like, come on, man. He was having a great season last year.
Yes, he was. He was having so great of a season. He was top two or three in tackles. I know Jonas ended up being there at the end of the season, but Clary jumped out. Like,
he might have been ahead of Sanker at that point in the season.
He was, as far as tackles and things like Jonas was still Jonas, but that's how special of a first half or first quarter of a season that Clary was having.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see. I know offensively they're going to look for a couple more offensive linemen because obviously the big injury news of the spring was losing Monroe Mills, who I know everyone was excited to see. Like, that was the kind of the headliner after Chandler Morris is getting this big offensive tackle from Louisville coming in. So he's going to be out for the season with an ACL injury now. And they're already going to try to add a couple offensive linemen, maybe another running back, because they say they want to have three running backs there. So it's going to be an interesting week, and it all kind of sets up on Wednesday. It's such a crazy time right now in the transfer portal. And obviously, you know, the big thing on Saturday leading into spring football games all over the country was this whole Nico Iamaliava situation. Matt, you were a player. Like, can you even imagine, you know, this holdout kind of ever being a thing in college football?
Nah. I mean, you got to have better people around you, in my opinion. Like, I'm not holding it against this young man, because at that age, the people around you influence you the most. So, when I was in college, it was my dad, my big mama, my aunts, my cousin Sean Hamlin, who just left Florida State. They wouldn't allow me to do nothing like that. Holdout. Yeah. What? Man, if you don't get your high pots at practice and, you know, take the money that's bestowed upon you because that's a blessing. You want to get your true market value, but come on, man. What are we doing? Hold out. You do know with pros, they got a lot more leverage than the college kid. Hold out. If you want to go hold out over there.
I think, I mean, the teams have more leverage than the pros too. Yeah. The teams don't really have much leverage. So I was kind of surprised with Tennessee that they're go ahead. We're not going to be able to. We're not going to meet you there, so go ahead. It's more trouble than it's worth. So I was surprised Tennessee was willing to take that step. And, I mean, we'll see kind of how it plays out for all sides here. I mean, Nico will have some options in the portal. We'll see where he ends up. I know, you know, down south here is one of the rumored stops for him. So we'll see what happens there. But, Ahmad, I want to appreciate you for coming on. I know spring football, it's over. We got a nice little off season. I know you got some track to get to and keeping up with that. But before you know it, we're going to be back out there on those fields outside of the new football operations center there in Hardy and taking in some fall football practice.
Well, man, we got that gunslinger from Texas saying he didn't come here to win just five games. So I'm right with you, brother. So I'm excited about the season. Everybody know I love the football program, and I'm trying to go back bowling, man. Not just limping in there with just sick wins. I'm talking about making a statement type. You need a Bronco Mendenhall 2018 type season to start the new era of your program. Yeah. So I'm excited.
That's the That's the interesting thing about, last year kind of felt like the year that everyone was like, all right, let's just get to 6-6 somehow. But this offseason, the expectations are now like, I don't want 6-6. Give me 7, give me 8, give me 9. Like everyone's like, we're coming for it. The schedule looks good. The team looks good. The transfer additions look good. Like it's time to stop messing around. Do you think that's fair?
I mean, I can't say expectation from a fan at this point isn't fair just because we're in the NIL era and it's a quick turnaround. Everything's microwave. So we went and got names. Like it was always, when UVA got a transfer or when you recruit, and it's like, who are the teams we're competing, like the university we're competing against, or where did this kid come from? So when you go get a guy from Ohio State, when you go get a guy from Notre Dame, go get guys from Louisville, it's like, ooh, we got some names. So, I mean, one of your guys just won a national championship. The other guy was, on the cusp of it. So, and then you look at Chandler Morris and you look at Kalen, like they like established guys that, well, Morris is established, but as far as like the name, they passed the name test, the eye test. So, yeah, man, I don't never put anything past the fans because I'm much more mature now. Petty Hawk used to be like, oh, y'all don't know what y'all talk about, but I understand it now. And I'm glad I understand it because I was kind of naive. So now I truly understand like the expectations from the fan base and it's warranted.
It was interesting. We had Joe Reed on the podcast last week, and he was kind of talking about the jumps that they made, from that, the 2-10 season to getting to 6-6 to, the next season getting to the Belk Bowl
Eight
and
and
then to the
five,
Orange 8-5 and then the Orange Bowl. And just kind of what you can see in the one off season. And yeah, that season getting to the Belk Bowl was a huge step for that program and to be able to set up for that next year. We joked, the transfer portal wasn't a thing back then, but we were like, how many of those guys would have made it to the 2019 season to be able to get to that AC? And he was like, probably not many.
That three to the neck Bryce Perkins was casted away and we inherited him because when he stepped foot on the scene in 2018 and Jordan Ellis was already here, it helped his transition of becoming a starter when you had a bell cow like Jordan Ellis, Juan Thornhill, Bryce. I was about to say Bryce Perkins again, but
Bryce Hall.
Bryce Hall. So, like, the pieces were there. It just amazes me how pieces are here and you think they aren't that good. But how one individual could just have you believing. So who's going to be the individual that joined the squad or individuals that have you believing and have you now looking at your offensive coordinator like, oh, he might be really good. Because, before Bryce Perkins, it was, nah. Then when Bryce Perkins got here, it was, oh, man, we rolling.
We'll see how it all ends up, but Ahmad, thanks for coming on, man. We will check back within you next fall and as we get into it. All right. Thanks, man. That's it for the Who's On podcast. We will be back later in the week with more. Until then, thanks for listening.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.